Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This podcast is a Roifield Brown production. Find others on iTunes.
All right. Yeah, I know.
Hello, it's Robert here, and we're at the Dumpty Dum Oxford meetup here at the St. Aldate's Tavern. And I'm also here with...
Maria.
Alison.
Nissy. And...
Nuala.
And a secret man in the background who's not willing to divulge his identity. And we are going to do our Dumpty Dum.
Dumpty 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 Dum, Dumpty Dumpty Dum Dum, Dumpty 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 Dum, Dumpty Diddly Dum, Dumpty Diddly Dumpty Diddly Dumpty Diddly Dum, Dumpty 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 Dum, Dumpty Diddly Dum.
They'll never play that.
Here we are. This is a Dumpty Dum special. I spoke to... I didn't realise it, but really, she's probably my favourite Archer's character, and she's probably actually yours as well. After doing Dumpty Dum for 3+ years and being a fan of the Archers for some 30-odd, everybody's favourite actors are Legion. So whether it was back in the 80s, it was Nelson, or whether it was Walter Gabriel... Or let's say now, people might say Jolene, or they might say Fallon. One name that never gets mentioned is a character who I think we all kind of love to hate, but we love her when she comes on our radios, and it's Susan. And of course, she's played by the actor Charlotte Martin. I thought we should do a Dumpty Dum special whereby I speak to Charlotte about her playing Susan for some, how many years now? Is it Charlotte?
Oh my goodness, I think I started in the programme in about 1982, which is scarily a long time ago.
Some 35 years. And the character of Susan has obviously gone through a very interesting and very specific kind of story arc. So here we are, Charlotte. Why don't you tell us how you got the role of Susan, and then tell us about going into the Pebble Mill Studios for the first time to be Susan Carter.
Okay. Well, I was at drama school in Birmingham at the Old Rep in Birmingham, which is a really old theatre. Prior to me being at the drama school, Trevor Harrison, who we all know plays Eddie Grundy, had been at the drama school and then came back occasionally to chat to us about acting and where we should go and what we should do when we left drama school. And he happened to mention that they were auditioning for this programme called The Archers, which I knew of because my parents had listened to it. Mm-hmm. And so I went along and auditioned for, in fact, two other parts prior to me getting Susan. And both times I went along, auditioned, and the director said, "Oh, yeah, we really like you," but and then I didn't get the part. And so I thought, "Oh, actually, I'm probably not going to be successful in this." But actually, it was William Smethurst, who is one of the well-known directors of The Archers, who sadly is now no longer with us. But he said to me, "Look, you know, we really like your voice. We really want you to be in the programme. So we will get back to you." So I went off, you know, young actor, thinking it's probably not going to happen. And blow me down, they came back and said, "There's this part, Susan Carter, young girl in the village. Would you like to play her?" So that was it. So I was
Charlotte. Did they create the role specifically for you then?
I'm not sure, to be honest. I know that the character hadn't been mentioned before, and as I say, I'd auditioned for these other two parts. They were in the program, but they didn't actually end up staying around for a long time. So I don't know whether William had any influence in saying, you know, well, I've got this actor that I quite like, and you know, can we create a role for her? But she definitely hadn't been mentioned or played by anyone else prior to me playing her.
Oh, look, there's Susan and little Emma too.
Where? Blimey. It's as thick as that, busy. I better get down and fetch me wages before he goes.
Afternoon, Mrs. Archer. Hello, Eddie.
You're going somewhere?
Afternoon, Susan.
Hello, Emma. My, aren't you getting a big girl?
Well, I finished here, if it's all the same with you.
You've done a good job for once. Looks a lot better.
I suppose so. I thought it had a tangled charm myself.
Yeah, it's all very much. That can do something, right?
You might have tidied up the mole nails. But yeah, I should think the vicar will be pleased.
One less thing for him to worry about, anyway.
As long as he puts his money where his mouth is, I don't mind. Right, I'm off to see him now.
Agreed a rate for the job, did you?
Richard will pay you, of course he will.
£25. Reckon he's got his money's worth.
Mm. Well, you better go and collect it then. See you in the ball this evening, shall we? Celebrating.
You might, darling, if you keep smiling at me like that. Might even buy you a drink. Afternoon.
He should give you that money to help pay off what he owes you.
He should, Mrs. Archer. And he's going to. Don't you worry about that.
And what do you think it was that he actually saw in a young Charlotte Martin back then?
Yeah, who knows? I mean, it's one of those difficult things, isn't it? Because unlike television, you haven't got any visuals to kind of go on and guide you in terms of casting someone. So I don't know. There must have been something about my voice, about the way I use my voice on radio, perhaps. It was my first job, so I hadn't got much experience. So I don't know. I don't know what he saw, but he obviously saw something, and thank goodness he did.
So what was it like working on the show back then? Describe, you know, your first foray into the studios at Pebble Mill.
Yeah, it was really scary. As I say, I hadn't done any radio before. So kind of went in, had met obviously William Smetherhurst, who cast me in the programme. And so, you know, everything was new. You know, luckily the cast were absolutely brilliant and very supportive, and saw kind of this naive young actress coming into the programme and guided me and told me about, you know, the best way to turn your page when you read the script, so not to make a noise, and to look out for the green light, not the, you know, when recording was about to start. And it was quite intimidating in a way, although, as I say, the cast were really friendly and lovely. But I was suddenly surrounded by these very kind of renowned actors, you know, people in their 50s and 60s and 70s and 80s, in fact, you know, who had been in acting for such a long time and were very professional and, you know, established. And even outside the studio, before we went in, you know, they got their, a few of the older characters had their specific seats where they sat every time we went into the court. And it was, you know, and they told old stories. They would kind of hold court in the corner in between scenes. And it was amazing, absolutely amazing for a young actor to come into that. And I learned an awful lot from those people.
Who did you specifically learn the most from, would you say? And who were you in awe of back then?
A chap who played Nelson Gabriel. I mean, he was just astounding. Very witty, very acerbic in his wit, but a great actor. There were several others. I mean, the lady who played Margot Boyd, who played Mrs. Antrobus, she'd been in it for a long time, and she was marvellous as well. But I think, all in all, you know, that older generation, that group of older people were just amazing, really. And as I say, very supportive to a young actor who didn't really know a lot about radio acting. And, you know, where it could be a bit irritating, you know, to have a young person coming in who doesn't know what to do and whatever. They were really great, and I hope that actually us lot being in the programme now for, you know, 20, 30 years are the same with new actors coming in now. I like to think we are.
So when you initially joined, you weren't Susan Carter, you were Susan Horobin.
Yes.
Describe the Horobins back then.
Well, they said, look, you come, this character has lived in the village, she was born in the village, she's got, you know, quite a large family, mainly brothers, one sister. They're very, very working class, have no money, a bit rough around the edges. Their garden is full of old cars, and, you know, rubbish. And so I kind of built up this picture of this young girl who had got, I think she got her first job in the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And actually one of the first scenes I remember was in the ball serving, one of the old chaps, I can't even remember his name now, but it was to do with a fruit machine. But there was this kind of backstory of Susan being known in the village, and, you know, everybody would have known her as she was growing up, but coming from this really rough family.
Mm-hmm.
So that was quite an interesting kind of backstory for me, which luckily I've been allowed to develop as much as possible.
Do you think that a lot of the character of Susan and her, because basically she's a frenemy of Clary, isn't she? She's friends with Clary, but she's definitely thinks she's somewhat better than Clary. And that's kind of rooted in the whole kind of Horobin kind of Grundy backstory, that they are the two down at hill working class families in the village, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, Susan is, you know, despite everyone saying, oh God, she's such a pain in the neck, I think at the heart of it, what she wants to do is rise above her poorly background, you know, kind of her low working class status. And I think she's done a really good job in a way. I mean, you know, she can come over as a bit pushy and a bit unfeeling in terms of, you know, other people and wanting to get her own way and move on up. Whereas Clary doesn't do that. Clary's sort of accepting, isn't she, of her status and where she is, and doesn't really have that drive. And I don't know where Susan got that drive from. It's quite interesting, actually. I don't know. I hadn't thought about this, actually. I mean, she does want to drive, and she does want to increase her family status and you know, get her kids into, you know, jobs and positions that perhaps she might never have had. But I don't know where that came from in Susan, actually. That might be quite interesting for me to think about, actually, where that actually came from.
She's never more happier than being invited round to the Aldridge's, is she?
Oh no, yeah, absolutely. She loves that. I think, you know, for Susan to be associated and be, as she says, you know, part of the Aldridge family now is probably her most important thing that's happened to her in her life. I mean, she's you know, to be associated with that kind of wealth,
mm-hmm.
is exactly what Susan would have dreamt of. So she absolutely loves that, and regularly, as you know, and listeners will realize that she takes every opportunity to point that out, or you know use Christian names, whereas you know, probably in the years before, she'd have called them Mr. and Mrs. Aldridge. Now of course it's Jennifer and Brian, which she revels in, I think.
And but an important kind of marker in the story of Susan, if we move on from you kind of marrying Neil, is you spent some time at Her Majesty's Pleasure, didn't you? Or at least the character did. I'm conflating the two things here. Can you give us a little bit of a background to that? And, you know, it did have some kind of wider repercussions within kind of British society, didn't it? You were mentioned, the character was mentioned in an august place. So give us a background to that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So Susan obviously comes from this really poor family, and her brothers, well, particularly one brother, is always getting into trouble and actually ended up in prison. Now, he was on the run from prison, and Susan despite her best interests, wanted to kind of, although she didn't agree with what he'd done, wanted to protect him. And when he was on the run, he came to her house, and she ended up looking after him for a couple of nights and dyeing his hair to help him get on the run. Now, it all ended up in disastrous consequences, with the police finding out and Susan being imprisoned for, I think it was a couple of months. This was outrageous, really, and the listeners were incredible at that time, because Susan had been put into prison, and everyone was saying, "Oh my God, this is outrageous! How could a woman who, you know, she'd done it on in the best intentions, and it was her brother, and this and the other," and actually it went, it got out into the media, and people were actually discussing it in terms of real life, and how there were lots of women who were having to endure a prison sentence for the most ridiculous of crimes, and mm-hmm. when they really they should have been helped and supported in society. So of course, this went to the House of Commons, and it was mentioned, in the Houses of Parliament, and it was just an incredible time, because I had reporters ringing me up at that time asking me about what were my views on women in prison and this, that and the other. I was even asked to go on to Kilroy.
Oh, wow.
You remember? Wow, all those years ago, Kilroy, which was a kind of discussion program, wasn't it, in the morning on BBC. And they wanted me to go on to discuss with women in prison, with women who'd actually been in prison. And I actually turned that down, because I thought, hold on, this is kind of really blurring reality and fantasy. Mm. And how dare I, as an actor, go on to television and discuss what, real women's plight, when I have really no idea whatsoever about what it's like. So I decided that was probably not a good move, and I'm glad I did that. But it just shows you how influential the programme can be, and how the blur, as I say, the blurring between fantasy and reality can get a bit skewed in terms of programmes and television and media.
Mm. But it is kind of powerful in terms of shining a light on a specific topic. One thing that I was about to say is that I'd forgotten, but actually I didn't know that actually Christopher was born with a hair lip, and that's another kind of important storyline in terms of new mothers not, for whatever reason, not being able to bond with their child, kind of postnatal depression. And then when the child has a very correctable deformity, but once it's so visible, that, that's another kind of interesting issue to shine a light on. So can you remember how that storyline was maybe introduced to you, the actor, then actually kind of playing that, and how that kind of played out with the story of you and Christopher?
Yeah, I mean, because obviously Susan originally got pregnant before she married Neil. So that was a little bit of a kind of storyline.
I tell you, those bell ringers, they're the worst, aren't they?
Aren't they just? So that was kind of, an initiation into probably kind of that should have kind of rung alarm bells really with me as an actor to think, okay, they're starting her off on this line. Where is this going to go? So Neil and Susan had this baby and got married, and that was all great. And of course, when they said, she was going to be pregnant again with a second child, which was quite acceptable. No one mentioned to me that this was going to be a problematic birth, if you want. So I had no idea. So of course, then because we only received the scripts every the month before we're due in to go, sometimes you don't know what's going to happen, and we know what your character's going to do, unless it's a massive storyline. So I didn't have much idea about what was going to happen. I just knew I was going to have a baby. And then of course it kind of gradually came out that there were going to be slight problems, because he was going to have this hair lip. And again, I think what happens with some of these storylines is that the scriptwriters introduce these things into the programme, but very often they allow them to grow in terms of how the audience are responding to them. And I think that's very good and very clever of the scriptwriters and the production team to allow that to happen, rather than actually put something out there and say, OK, we know this is going to happen and it's going to develop in this and this is the outcome. So they allow things to be a bit organic. And I think that happened with the Christopher story. It was a really interesting story to do. And again, I think I've mentioned this to you before, Royfield, about how, although Susan is a bit of a caricature sometimes, I really like that she has to deal with real life problems and real life issues in a very realistic fashion. And so I'm really privileged as an actor to have that mix really of kind of eccentric, wild and caricature kind of acting with these real life storylines, such as the one with Christopher.
Looking back at your 35 years on the show now, how much would you say that Susan, the character of Susan, is your construct as opposed to the writers? If you had to put a percentage on it.
Yeah, it's very easy to say, OK, it's 50-50. I think the script writers have given me the skeleton. Right from the word go, they gave me a really good idea about where she came from and who she was. But what they've then done, so I would say that was probably, 75-25, in terms of input in the very beginning.
Mm-hmm.
But then as the program has gone along, what the script writers are very clever at doing and the production team are very clever at doing is allowing and enabling actors who've played characters for a certain amount of time to grow those characters in their own way. And they're very confident, I think, in a lot of the actors' abilities to go in certain directions with the character. And I think, if the character is really well understood by the scriptwriters, and scriptwriters will very often have their favourite characters that they write for and will write very well for them and understand them very well. It's very much, and again, I've described this as a dance between the actor and the scriptwriter. And now I would say, the scriptwriters throw things out there, but as an actor, I know Susan so well now that I probably am more confident to do a lot of things with her that perhaps the scriptwriters might not have imagined, or to use certain situations that they've written for me.
Give us an example of that.
Let me think about this now. For example, I suppose the whole stuff in the shop where Susan is, quite a bossy and kind of shopkeeper and likes her shop and, likes power and stuff.
The tabards.
And that was thrown out there. But then there were little bits of that where I thought, oh, I can take this to a new level. Or, the tabard can become something greater than just a uniform. And and so I suppose it's about taking those tiny little hints of bossiness and power mad struggle that Susan has, that and just growing them. I have at the heart of Susan, I think, for me is an influence which I can't deny is Acorn Antiques and all that stuff, the kind of Victoria Wood sketches and stuff. And I use that really, I think, as a really important influence in how I develop Susan and the things I think, I could probably push that to that new level, but using those influences, those great Acorn Antiques, the type of stuff I'm talking about.
Absolutely.
To visualise Susan and what she'll do and where she'll take things. And the writers, as I say, and the production team are very happy and great in allowing that to happen, which perhaps may not happen in telly soaps, I don't know, as much.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. and UnitedHealthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You've been working with Brian literally from the start then, haven't you? You have this very close relationship, and obviously Brian plays Neil. Kind of integral to that is the fact that she's always trying to improve him, isn't she? She's trying to make him better himself, you know, drag him up by his bootstraps. I always think that, as I said, going back to what I said at the start, this is more of a statement as opposed to a question. The relationship of Neil and Susan frequently gets, doesn't quite get the limelight, which I think it kind of deserves. You know, in terms of, so you have the Archers family, the family of the Archers, whether it's, you know, people who are named Archer, and then the Aldridges, who are also obviously Archers as well. And then you have the other families. And I think the relationship which is probably has a more light shined on it would be Linda and Robert Snell. But there is so much, I think, and even listen just this week with the Kefir storyline, where the Kefir kind of blew up and nearly so got upon by you, by Susan. But he can put his foot down at times, can't he?
Oh,
you know,
yes.
And he did then.
Oh, no! What have you done, Neil?
I haven't done anything.
It looks like a bum's hit the kitchen. Oh, my kefir!
Well, I told you to put it in the fridge.
I didn't know it was going to start exploding. Oh, no, the coconut milk's ruined.
Well, they're all ruined, unless you start scraping it up off the floor.
It's gone everywhere. What am I going to do?
Mop it up, I hope.
Tomorrow, for the taste test. I've nothing left.
Well, at the moment, I'm not too worried about that.
It's only the plain one, the one I stuck in the fridge.
Well, use that, then.
Oh, Tom will think I haven't bothered.
Well, I don't care what he thinks. My eyes are starting to water.
It's not that bad.
Sour milk, something yeasty.
Oh, we'll soon get it cleaned up.
I am not cleaning anything. I need some fresh air. I'm going to see to the pigs.
Wait, you're leaving me to deal with all this on my own?
Yes, I am. It's turning my stomach, Susan.
Oh, but...
When I get back, kefir had better just be a dim and distant memory.
Describe working with Brian and maybe how that relationship has developed. And then also Neil's kind of frustration with Susan in terms of her, you know, always wanting to better herself and him feeling, you know, kind of somewhat got upon.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lovely relationship, I think. And at the heart of it is a real love, I think, between the two of them. I think, you know, it's very easy to say, oh, God, she's always moaning at him and blah, blah, blah. But
you know what, though, Charlotte? I think it's much easier for the listener to think that Neil loves her as opposed to her loving Neil. She obviously does, don't get me wrong.
Yeah. No, I can see that, absolutely. I think he's, you know, in relationships, there's a giver and a taker very often, isn't there? Mm-hmm. You know, and despite anyone, you know, arguing the opposite to that, I think if you are really scrutinise relationships. There is often somebody who will give more than the other.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's Neil. I think they love each other very much, but I think Neil is very clever and naturally clever, I think, at allowing Susan to be who she is. But having probably the ultimate control in the relationship, where, you know, probably the listener or new listeners to the Archers would think it was the other way around. But I think actually, if you really scrutinise that relationship very carefully, Neil is in complete control and allows Susan certain, reins her in sometimes and allows her to go out. But at the end of the day, I don't think she would push him to the absolute limits. I think people might think that she might, but I don't think that's true. I think he's actually got the ultimate control. Don't you agree?
I think you're right. You know, with any complex drama, there's always two levels you can look at it. There's the very surface, is, you know, what has been said, and then you look beneath that, and why is what being said and what hasn't been said. And you know, without properly engaging your brain as a listener to the Archers, you know, the power dynamic is that she's a little mini Hitler and he's a sought upon partner.
However,
you're completely right. There's a lot of things that kind of go unsaid, and the power dynamic isn't quite as one-sided as you would actually expect.
No.
And I always think that Neil is a really interesting character. This is one of the points which I made a few weeks ago, actually, on Dumby Dum, that, you know, he's the chair of the parish council. And actually, if you want to see the class divide still writ large in a British drama, you know, listen to the Archers. And he is the one character without an RP accent who has a very clear position of authority. You know, he is the only, you know, working character that sounds working class anyway, who, you know, who has an official station within the village.
And people listen to him and respect his
view.
They do.
Even down to the, you know, and it was kind of interesting with the whole kind of Robin Helen storyline, the fact that Helen actually said, Neil, would you be a character witness for me? Yeah. You're so lucky to have him, Susan. Just to finish
she knows,
up.
She knows that, really. That's why she cooks him chili every so often. You know?
Aye. the chili storyline, where did that come from? Because that is such a thing now, isn't it?
It's ridiculous. I mean, I think the scriptwriters had written this. I mean, it goes back to what we were talking about, you know, where does the actor, how far can the actor push the character in terms of the writing and stuff. And I remember the writers writing this where she cooked in some chili. I think between the two of us, you just thought, oh, that just felt natural that she would say, oh, it's chili tonight. In a way that he would say, oh yes, I know what she's saying now. Mm-hmm. You know, kind of hidden. And we threw that away in one episode. And then suddenly on Twitter it became this thing whereby a lot of the listeners were saying, oh, okay, chili, we know what that means. And then it just grew and grew and grew. And of course we, you know, I love all that stuff on Twitter, and so I kind of played on that a little bit. But yeah, it's taken off completely. And so even in, you know, studio now, we laugh very much in terms of, you know, whether Susan's going to be cooking him a chili tonight and what's going to happen. But yeah, that is one of those wonderful things that actually, you know, years ago, before social media and before we ever did any tweeting about the Archers and whatever, would never have happened. But now, thanks to the, you know, social media, we have all these different avenues to grow the characters and grow these ideas, which I'm very much for. I think it's a marvellous addition.
So I take it then that you're a dab hand. Charlotte Martin's a dab hand at rustling up a chili at home.
I'm not, I mean, I like cooking, but it's, you know, I I'm not a great meat eater, for example. So if there's a chili happening in the house, it's going to be with a well-known substitute, meat substitute.
All right, let's just finish up because I know you've got to toddle off.
Yeah.
Calendar Girls.
Oh gosh, yes.
Right. So tell us about that photo shoot in the Radio Times, because I must admit I have it blown up pretty big on my bedroom wall.
Oh no. Goodness me. Yes, well, that was amazing. I mean, we did it, it was under the watch of Sean O'Connor, of course, who was with us for a while, who was great. He was very keen on kind of extending the avenues of the Archers actors and the things that we could do. And so a couple of times, I think we did Blind Spirit the one Christmas, and then of course he said, well, okay, let's do Calendar Girls. And we all thought, oh gosh, this will be interesting, because that's such a visual play that you know, it was quite daring to do it on radio. Anyway, I was luckily, you know, he included me in the cast, which was great, and we did it, and it was great fun. But of course, you know, following that, everyone's saying, okay, well, are you going to do the calendar? What's going to happen? Blah, blah, blah. And so, we were encouraged to do the calendar, which was great fun, if a little daunting.
Uh-huh.
We all ended up in a studio in London and were very well looked after. And there was quite a bit of Prosecco on hand, you know, kind of just to get us all nice and chilled. But it was a great experience, and it was very liberating, actually. And I think all of us, if you interviewed all of us now who were in the calendar, although we were a bit apprehensive at first, we were all very pleased with the final photographs. And it was just a lovely thing to have done, and, you know, we're very glad we did it.
Well, so am I, and as I said, I gaze at it lovingly, adoringly, on a daily basis. You've been in it for 35 years now. Who's been your favourite editor, do you think? Under which stewardship do you think you, as an actor, and then Susan as a character, have maybe developed the most, and why?
Well, I mean, I have to take my hats off to William Smithhurst, who obviously gave me the role in the first place and was very supportive of me as a very young, as I say, you know, inexperienced actress who he had faith in me. And, you know, if it hadn't been for him, then I wouldn't be in the programme. So William obviously holds a place in my heart. I was a great fan of Vanessa Whitburn, who was with us for a long time, and I'd worked with her in radio drama before that and during my early days in the Archers. Fabulous director, you know, really, really understood actors and was great with us all. Sean was a great director, editor, and as I said, you know, about kind of doing Blythe Spirit and Calendar Girls, he was very innovative and gave us lots of opportunities that perhaps we might not have had during the programme. But I must mention our lovely new editor, who is just the most marvellous and intuitive and great, just a great, great person who's doing fabulous things with the programme. And as I say, you know, one of the key things for editors and directors are understanding the actors and allowing us to have the freedom to create our characters and develop our characters in our own way. So, you know, that's a joy. So we're having a really great time, and hopefully the programme will blossom under his watch.
Charlotte Martin, well, thank you for coming on to a very special Dum De Dum and allowing you to blossom as as Susan Carter.
Okay, well, thank you very much, and it's great to speak to you again.
Oh, I love you. You're ace.
I'll ramble a bit.
No, stop it. That was lovely.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.